is open. Good morning. We have a couple bills on the agenda today that aren't quite ready, so we will carry over Senate Bill 28, and we will carry over Senate Bill 333 into next week. And so the other bills we have scheduled for a work session, and we'll just start right in. Senator Taylor is excused for a minute. She should be returning, and Bertschinger is...
He'll be down in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
He's way late in the hall.
Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 701 and kind of get a briefing on where we are on this biennial bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 701 is the reconnect bill, and so there is a rolling reconnect in statute that is really separate from what this bill addresses at this time. The bill really just addresses a connection to the Internal Revenue Code that have to do with a bunch of administrative provisions. It updates references in the governing statutes of the PERS system to federal law that establishes taxable incomes. It affects annual benefits payable to members, specifies rules around the minimum distribution requirements under certain circumstances, and relates to the benefits and service credit for a period of in the uniform services. The connection is updated to the federal code that would define shareholders and S-corporations who may represent their companies in proceedings before the tax court. It updates the connection to the Internal Revenue Code to define which organizations may qualify for consideration for a charitable tax checkoff. Also updates the statutes governing the Oregon College Savings Plan, individual development accounts, and unemployment insurance to connect to the latest version of the Internal Revenue Code as of December 31st, 2016. And previously that date was about December 31st, 2015. The actual reconnect measure does not have a revenue impact because it simply this year is related to a bunch of administrative considerations, and there is no fiscal impact. Generally, what happens with the rolling reconnect is that the state is exposed to changes that may be made in the federal tax system, that, and we've outlined in previous meetings how that would affect the state. So any drastic changes there, it may be possible to mitigate by setting the reference to taxable income as of a certain date prior to any changes in the federal system. The changes that really the connection has increased revenue a bit recently, primarily through the Protecting Americans from Tax Hike Act of 2015. And what that has done is expired a lot of provisions that were considered tax expenditures in Oregon. The exclusion of home mortgage forgiveness from debt discharge income is not extended to 2017, and so that income has been included. The Oregon impact is roughly $14 million a biennium. The additional thing that was allowed to sunset in the Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act is the qualified tuition deduction, and that was not extended to 2017, and that is has a revenue impact to Oregon of $6 million per year, or per biennium, rather. And so those other provisions affect Oregon just by the existing statute, but this measure does not actually change that.
Okay. For some of our newer members, can you refresh us with the difference between this measure that we pass and the rolling reconnect, and why that goes off and on?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the rolling reconnect is simply where the Oregon taxable income is tied to the federal taxable income, and it just says in statute that the Oregon taxable income shall be the federal taxable income, and so when changes are made in the federal taxable income, it can change the impacts in the tax base for Oregon. And this measure really just kind of deals with anytime the Internal Revenue Code is referenced for administrative purposes of these various types of programs. And so this is more of an administrative bill at this point than actually substantially changing what the taxable income base is considered to be.
Questions, Senator Bircher?
Just observation. Obviously, LRO just told us how significant changes in the federal tax code can affect revenue here in Oregon, and I'd like to point out that just today, the Ways and Means Chairman and Speaker Ryan said that they are going to overhaul the entire federal tax system. So I just want to point out, I don't know if we even know what we're connecting to anymore.
Senator Boquist.
I do have a question, but I'll comment on Senator Bershiger's. To be bipartisan and being the Democrat in the room, Monday, the House Democrats in the U.S. Congress announced their version of a low and middle income tax cut and tax overhaul. So it appears that at least there's one thing common in Washington, D.C. They're all talking about tax overhaul. Might be slightly different. But having said that, I do have a question for staff, just for the record. On the staff measure summary in the last line, and then on page 26, we, of course, waive interest and interest in penalties for any significant changes that were due to retroactive treatment under the federal tax code. And for the record, could you just maybe provide an example of what something like that might be?
Let's see. So the Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, I think it simply covers any potential changes. I don't think that there's anything substantial that at this time, but I will have to get back to you on maybe a more specific example.
We're just wondering, traditionally, we must stick this, obviously the drafters stick this in here as the, okay, what if this happens? And the question is there must have been something in history that said something's going to happen, or is this, if there's a tax overhaul at the federal level and it causes a change, and I would say the Clinton tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts, the Reagan tax cuts, something like that. Is that sort of what this covers?
Well, I would say that the various tax cuts or changes to the tax base could affect the taxable income and actually affect the rolling reconnect. This language looks to be limited to only these certain statutes that are administrative in nature. And I don't think that this particular phrase addresses those, but Oregon can be profoundly affected by those types of changes.
Well, I was just noting, Mr. Chair, because it goes both ways. It says, you know, the refunds will be without interest, but there won't be any penalties in interest either. And I was just assuming that there was some normal process that if something's going to happen, and it, of course, it is the year's retroactive before January 2017. So don't have a problem. I was just pointing out on the record. So, any work session, Mr. Chair?
Yes. I had one question, Christina. How come the date is 2016, and are we talking about the current laws of 2016? Why are we relating to the Federal Internal Revenue Code as amended and in effect on December 31st, 2016? Is that what we're updated to? So there's no changes that were made this year?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that the that's just kind of been the schedule for the reconnect. You know, previously it was 2014, then it went to 2015.
Yeah, I didn't see the December 31st.
You know, so why it doesn't say May 1st, 2017, that's another interesting question I would look into.
Okay. Do we want to carry this over since we're going to look into this? Or, I mean, the reason it's 2016, Mr. Chair, is it's tax year 2016.
Yeah, that's the December 31st, yeah. So I'm okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why the 16 is in there.
Yeah.
Next year we'll be putting 17 in, and those of us that are survived this year. So If I don't see everyone jumping up and down, no. Mr. Chair, I move SB 701 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 701 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? There are no amendments. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Berger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yep.
Chair Ask.
Ask votes aye. Measure passes. Goes to the floor of the Oregon Senate with a due pass recommendation. I'll be the carrier.
Yeah, you have to explain it.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 936. Kyle, first quick briefing, refresh us.
So yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 936, we do have the dash A3 amendment. So just as a reminder, this is a measure that's making changes to the strategic investment program. It's a property tax exemption program for traded sector industry, and it's generally large value properties. And it's what it, the change, just as a reminder from the public hearing, is it's increasing, it's really doing two things. It's making a change to the taxable real market value of a piece of property that's receiving this exemption. So just as a reminder, in the with the SIP program, there's a minimum amount that a piece of property has to be to meet the requirements to receive the exemption. But that minimum, below that minimum amount, is taxable. And then above that is what the exemption applies to. And what 936 is doing is it's increasing in rural areas the minimum value of the property that would be taxable based upon the overall cost of the property. So there's a chart in the SMS that shows the staggered increase in the underlying taxable real market value. The dash A3 amendment, this was noted during the public hearing. It's just adjusting really the effective date. Rather than being July 1st, 2017, it would be the effective date, the 91 days following sign you die. And that was addressing concerns of some projects that are being negotiated right now. So not trying to grab something that could be right around that deadline that's been underway and under negotiation for some time. So that's the adjustment in the A3. We do have the paperwork. The fiscal is expected to be a minimal. The revenue impact statement for the SIP is it's an indeterminate revenue impact statement. That's largely for a couple reasons. One is these projects really are few and far between. There's a little over a dozen of them today, so it's hard to really establish a baseline and then forecast how these would be affected in years going forward. Another wrinkle, I suppose, in creating a revenue impact estimate is in addition to the taxable portion of the property. So you're increasing the taxable portion that would yield increases in property tax revenue for certain size projects. But of course, there could be offsetting instances where we have local fees that are negotiated outside of the SIP or within the SIP program, but it's outside of the property tax revenue. So if you have the assumption that right now local governments are already negotiating the strongest deal possible and getting as many fees as possible, if you increase the property tax revenues that are going to be imposed, you would expect an offset in those fees to come down. So that's another difficulty in trying to give a sense of what the revenue impact will be. But I did superimpose the changes on the projects that are existing now just to give some sense of it. And of course, it'd take a number of years to capture all these different projects. But this figure is in the revenue impact statement. And you're looking at about $1 million or so in additional potential property taxes. And that's important because, of course, those are going to the local districts, whereas the locally negotiated fees may be specific to the county or the city or other local programs. So there could be a slight increase of maybe $400,000 or so in, if we're jumping out, maybe 5-10 years, going to school districts. And again, those would be offset, we would expect, by some of the fees to the other local governments. So in some cases, really expected more or less to be, in many cases, an overall net wash, but it could change the distribution of where these dollars are going a bit.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the underlying point of this is to spur large projects to rural Oregon.
Exactly, that's true, yeah.
Questions of Kyle? Senator Boquist?
And just for the record, the verb in this program is may. Is that not correct, Kyle? I mean, this option is out there in counties, may, and come to an agreement, may do this, may, there's no shall, this is permissive.
Yes, Senator, the changes in the bill are statutory changes, so if a county goes forward with trying to negotiate with a project or incentivize a project, the change in the statute are requirements, but it is the exemption in and of itself is a may, yes.
Okay. Silence is golden, Mr. Chair. I move the A3 amendment dated 5/10 of 17 into SB 936.
Senator Boquist moves the -3s into Senate Bill 936. Any discussion? Objection? Seeing none, amendment is in.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 936 as amended by the A3 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 936 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boettcher.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yep.
Chair Hassett.
Pass votes yes. Senate Bill 936 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. I think, unless one of you committee members want to carry this, Betsy Johnson is the sponsor.
That's a lovely person to carry this.
Yeah. Let's yep. her carry this. Okay.
Bus hitting her right here.
So we're going to close that work session, and we're going to stay out in rural Oregon with hay thrashers and move to a work session on Senate Bill 596. I believe we also have a new amendment in there.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 596, we have the -4 amendment. So just as a reminder, the underlying bill is extending property tax exemption to specified property, and that is property of machinery and equipment that's used to compress and bale harvested straw, hay, grass, or other plants for the purpose of storage or shipment. So there was some concern in the previous discussions in the committee of placing this exemption language within the farm machinery and equipment property tax exemption statute. What the -4 does is this would place this within another existing property tax exemption statute that really lines up in many ways better in that it already has real property or personal property that can be exempt. And the important distinction here was for this type of property, the hay thrashing property could be real property or personal property under existing law. But the changes in the measure with the -4, and this was in the -1 as well, is it more or less declares this property is personal property. So whether there's a distinction between real or personal, it makes it all personal property. But unlike the -1, this change in definition is contained to just the hay or the specified property in the -4 rather than applying to all the different types of property. So that was part of the concern that was raised. And of course, this requirement of making it personal property allows it to fit within the relating to clause as well of the measure. So that's part of the reason for the need of that declaration that it is personal property. We do have the paperwork on this one as well. Again, the fiscal on 596 with the -4 is also minimal. The revenue impact statement, I do have that out there. and it's about $300,000 in revenue impact loss estimated for each biennium. And that's based upon information we received from county assessors for the property, this type of property that is being taxed today. So there's tax being levied on this property in many instances today. So going forward, following the change with the -4 language in SB 596, that property would become exempt.
Well, that was one of the problems, is that some places it was taxed, some places it wasn't. Some places they just didn't know that these things existed. And unlike houses, there's no address or tax lots.
Right, Mr. Chair, yeah. And so the loss estimates are based upon those that reported that they are imposing it right now. So it's not including the other counties that may have property such as this but weren't imposing the tax to begin with. And a thing I noted, or something worth noting, and it's in the revenue impact also, is this really is using an interpretation that the distinction between the farm property and processing property still exists. And that is the way that the measure is drafted. But just to, I guess, put that on the record to make it clear that the property as it's specified in the -4 amendment would be exempt. But if you go the next step and you really do get to the processing of this property, so not just the compressing of it, but you're processing it into another product or some way, shape, or form, that property would still be subject to taxation. So that keeps the revenue impact more narrow to the property that really is specified in the measure.
So that theoretically would make it easier for assessors. That's the line, the bright line that they were asking for.
It certainly, yes. It tells the assessors this property is exempt. So that should make it more clear, yes.
Senator Riley?
And the -1 has already been included, or is that the case? Or
yes, Senator Riley, the -1 and the -4, the language is a little bit different, but the property that it's attempting to specify is the same. It's still the hay baling and such. The difference there is it avoids the personal property distinction of possibly applying to other pieces of farm property as well. So it removes that concern that it could, I don't know if inadvertent is the right word, but
narrows it.
Yes, it does narrow it to make sure it's capturing just this machinery equipment used to compress and bale harvested stray, and it doesn't, or straw, excuse me, straw, hay, grass, and other plants as well.
Okay, thank you.
Another question, Senator Boquist?
I want to have a question. Are we ready?
I think
Chair, I move the A4 amendment into Senate Bill 596, dated 4/27/17, and I'll speak to the motion.
Senator Boquist moves the -4s into Senate Bill 596. Senator Boquist, discussion.
Just for clarity, the A4 does narrow it down and focuses down to provide a better bright line. And I will note on page 2, this affects property tax years beginning on and after July 1st of 2017. This is going forward only. So, yeah.
Senator Burchard. Any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, -4s are in.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 596 as amended by the A4 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 596 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bagshear?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Yes.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes aye. Senate Bill 596 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation.
It's Senator Canope's bill. If he doesn't want to carry it, then I'll carry it, but we should offer him first.
We'll put Canope down as the carrier. And that closes our work session. We're 3 for 5 on our agenda today. Dr. Warner pointed out that we're playing baseball and 3 for 5, that'd be a pretty good day. So that clears us out for the day. Joint committee tomorrow at 8:30, and this committee back on Monday. We are adjourned. We are adjourned.